Good morning, people. Welcome back here to the Mark Steiner Show on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We're about to have a conversation with Carl Stokes, who now represents the 12th Congressional City Council District in Baltimore City Council, where he's chair of Taxation, Finance, and the Economic Development Committee. It's your chance to have this final conversation, at least here on the Mark Steiner Show, with Carl Stokes before you decide your vote today or Tuesday at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner, log on to our Facebook pages, but do call in with questions for Carl Stokes, 410-319-8888. Carl, welcome. Good to have you back.
Hey, I'm glad to be here, Mark. I'm glad you added, after final conversation, you added before you vote. I was a little afraid there.
Well, today is the last day for the early vote. And it's really important because you can also register to vote and vote on this day, and change. You can't change.
Right, you can register,
but you can't change your party affiliation.
Right. So, which is a big deal because I did. I've been knocking on doors all week. Well, all 6 months, but we were particularly knocking on doors in this neighborhood for the last 5 or 6 days, and there were a number of people who didn't realize that they could register. There were people that we saw particularly who. Moved into the neighborhood from Baltimore County or anywhere but Baltimore City. There were some students at Morgan also
who could vote.
Yeah, absolutely, and they didn't realize it. And so we got them to walk down to Cold Spring Lane here and Alameda and register and vote on the same day.
There you go.
So good.
And it's also important for the 20,000 people in the city who are returning citizens and now have the right to vote. And which is really important,
right?
So you can now go register today and vote. So
yeah, absolutely. And so yeah, there are still a number of guys and some ladies who don't realize that applies to them, and they are now eligible to vote, and they can, as you say, register today and vote today.
So let's get into the heart of this. Each day there seems to be something popping in the news, and I asked Ms. Dixon and Ms. Pugh yesterday about something's in the news. May I ask you about something's in the news today?
Sure. Okay.
So the Board of Estimates voted, again, Port Covington, which is where we started yesterday. They approved this TIF and the Board of Estimates.
Well, they approved the pieces of it.
What do you mean?
Well, they didn't approve the TIF because they don't approve the TIF. What they approved was the waiving of the inclusionary housing mandate that the city government has a very weak inclusionary housing mandate, which says that any new development of housing, 20% of that housing has to be set aside for affordable housing, for low and moderate income housing. But it's so weak is that Baltimore City a developer only has to follow the rule if the city can fund it. So we would have to give the developer the money to do it, which is stupid and bad because Montgomery County doesn't do it and most other places don't do it.
The ones that have inclusionary housing.
But here's the deal. So we've waived, according to what happened yesterday, the city government by a 3-2 vote, of course the mayor always has 3 votes, waived even that modest inclusionary housing mandate because the housing department says we don't have the money to do it.
I mean, yeah. So when you look at this, when I was looking at the Sun papers this morning, there was a report on this where it said that if there were affordable units, it must be accessible to families earning less than 80% of the median household income, which is a relatively high threshold. That they will aim to ensure that at least 20% of the employees at the site live in Baltimore. That they will contribute $10 million in the next 5 years to workforce development, education, $150,000 for youth jobs. 10% of the thousands of proposed whose residences may be available. Maybe. It's all maybe.
Yeah, it always is always a maybe.
So tell me your position on this. As if you were mayor, if you become mayor,
right,
then what can you do to deal with this? If you anything,
yeah. We can. First of all, we wouldn't even be sending these kind of bills down to the city council. There's two parts to this. One part is as mayor. The second part is I'm chairman right now until December 7th of the Taxation, Finance, Economic Development Committee. I'm going to talk about that. In other words, that bill has to come through our committee. It has to pass through the committee that I chair.
The Port Covington, in order for it to go back to the mayor's desk for signing, you mean?
That's right. That's right. So it has to, whatever they signed yesterday is of little consequence because it has to pass the city council. So let me talk about as mayor. As mayor, I wouldn't even send this bill down. I wouldn't even recommend that it goes forward until and unless there is a signed agreement in the bill that requires local hiring at a certain percentage, not a hope, not a maybe, not a try, not a goal, but actually requires it. I would not send a bill forward that doesn't require inclusionary housing at 20%. And not the city pays for it, but the developer pays for it. He's asking us for $535 million. And he says that they're putting, I don't know, $5 billion in it. I forget the numbers now. Anything over $1.50, it kind of confuses me, you know. I know that's not funny. But I'm just saying, as mayor, I wouldn't even send the bill forward. I wouldn't do it because I would negotiate the best deal possible, and the best deal is on my side, meaning on the citizen side, not on the developer side. We would, and you probably know that I would be very wary of sending any TIF bills forward that were not for development in stressed areas. That's really what a TIF was for. I'm straying a little bit, but I'll come back. A TIFs originally in America were for small developers in blighted, underemployed, stressed areas, not for the wealthy developers. As a matter of fact, no one gave TIFs to wealthy developers. William Donald Schaefer thought it was a terrible idea to give wealth, to give TIFs to the wealthy. A terrible idea. He never used them in his time, although he had the ability to. He wouldn't use them. I said that.
With everything of Schaefer, he did develop the Inner Harbor.
He did.
And without that.
Without that. He did. He did. He used a little UDAG money for the Hyatt, which was interesting because I think at the time they got about a $10 million grant. But here's the difference. I got to say this about Schaefer and Bob Embry and Jay Brody, the guys who were around. Even though they gave a grant to build the Hyatt for $10 million, we have a profit sharing agreement that's still in effect to this day. So that at a certain cap in terms of profits for the Hyatt, the city has a 50-50 agreement with the Hyatt to this day. So the city recovers funds at a 50-50 agreement. In other words, we invested in the Hyatt. They have to pay back on the investment to the citizens of Baltimore. We haven't done any such thing in any of the TIFs going forward. There are no returns. I think one or two may say, but the cap is so high that we will never see anything from it. Now, this is an unusual situation. So as mayor, coming back to your question, as mayor, I wouldn't send forward these agreements. But here's the part two. Here's the wonderful part about all of this is I am going to be the chair of the Economic Development Committee, Taxation, Finance, until December 7th. This bill has to come before the city council through the committee that I chair. We can write into the bill amendments that say you must do this exactly. Not a hope, not a wish, but you must do this exactly. And that's what we'll be looking to do.
So, folks, join us here, 410-319-8888. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Email us at talk@steinershow.org. Your time to question and hear from Carl Stokes, who's seeking to be the next mayor of the city of Baltimore, 410-319-8888. Let's hear from you and have this dialogue with Carl Stokes here for the remaining part of this hour, 410-319-8888. So let me ask you a political question, not a comfortable one, but a political question.
Mm-hmm.
So all the polls have you down even below
down.
Right. 5% to Elizabeth Emery, even
absolutely
above you as well.
Right, at least the last couple, that's couple, for sure. Yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, how does that – what does that say to you about where the race is for you?
Well, it says that, truthfully, you know, I'm a realist, but I think I'm going to win. So even though I'm a realist, I think I'm going to win. Obviously, folk have a lot more money than I have. I mean, four, five, six times more money. And I think that the ads that they were able to get up early, other than Warnock, who doesn't have a base, I think that the people, many people wanted an alternative, and I got to say this, to my former colleague, Sheila Dixon. And so Sheila has a strong base. It's where it is, and it's not going anywhere, period. And I think people were trying to decide who would they go with other than. And then one of the contenders, other than David Warnock, was able to put her ads and her visibility and her signage and everything out first. And I think people gravitated toward that. Now, I could be completely wrong and say it was all because they felt stronger about that individual than myself. But I think it may some of both. But I think strongly it was who got out first, who showed viability first, who showed they had the money to win, who showed that they – anyway. So where am I now? I'm in a place where we're knocking on doors every day and people are saying something different than what the last two polls have said. The first two polls said, you know, that I was a very much a much stronger contender. They changed polls. They changed polling companies. Having said that, it's very hard to judge. But when we're on the street, we're getting a lot different reaction outside than we're getting just looking at the Sun paper poll. And I don't know whether I should believe the poll or not believe the poll, but we're acting as if we're going to win the race.
So there are a lot of things going on here. I mean, they come back to the kind of what's happening between some of the candidates here politically, but 410-319-8888 as we talk with Carl Stokes. So I guess you've been following what's been happening at the place called the Tubman House.
Oh, yes, the Tubman House. Absolutely.
The 1619 Coalition, Friends of a Friend, No Boundaries, Communities United have taken over this house right at the spot where Freddie Gray was arrested.
Yeah, right across
the street.
Mm-hmm.
And the city is threatening to take the house from them to board it back up. And they're saying, no, the city needs to put electricity in the house and give us water. We can fix the house up. And I've walked through the house.
Right.
It's in solid condition.
Yeah.
I mean, so what as a mayoral candidate and as a mayor, how would you respond to these kind of things? It kind of all goes to the heart of how we develop neighborhoods and what and the unrecognized power of people in their own communities.
Yeah, absolutely. I actually I was the only elected official who actually was there on the day that we had the press conference and folk had the open house. And I did walk through the house as you did, first, second floor, and saw that it's in good shape. It's ready to go. And the city wrapped – here's what's amazing to me. I would have thought that the city, the mayor, housing, and others would have been there also with the community and said, what a great idea. This is fantastic. If we haven't done anything else this whole year, and we hardly have, here's something that we could brag about as we move to the second year. We're going to have the community own this house. We're going to send a few workers over. We're going to help make sure it's stable. We're going to absolutely turn the electrician on and electricity on and the water, and we're going to make sure it's all well. And again, we're going to try to bring other partners for you. We're going to go and talk to some of the nonprofits who said they were going to do all these wonderful things to come here and not only just stabilize the house, but design it in a way that works for the citizens who would make best use of it. And I think we should do it a few houses in that neighborhood, obviously. So we have places. I would move, you know, the city's full employment center over there. I would move wraparound services over there. I would take a few homes over there and some for the community to operate out of, and then I would make it also a center for city services for many of the people who are there.
Now, I last Saturday I went down to the No Boundaries celebration and barbecue and the thing they had at Pressman in Pennsylvania.
Yes,
right by Jubilee Housing, and where Elder Harris was on the roof until 500 people went to vote, which they did, and he's off the roof. but when I was there, one of the things I noticed was that right across from St. Peter Claver, there, and there's this little store in the corner, and Jubilee is across the street on the next corner.
Right.
There's a series of abandoned buildings, and they're in bad shape, and one is buckling out. You could see it buckling out towards the sidewalk.
Okay.
Right?
Does it have a structure holding it?
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
No. So, and people could die.
Right.
If that falls.
Yes.
So you're mayor. We have a lot of houses like this, and there's a lot of arguing about when you go into a neighborhood. I don't know if you read the article that Dr. Lawrence Brown co-wrote with the chairman of the Department of Morgan State University in the City paper about.
Mm-hmm. I did not miss it.
About alternative ways of dealing with this to ensure that people stay in their neighborhood when things begin to redevelop and can stay there at the same rates they were before, so they're not moved to other neighborhoods. So,
sure.
I mean, what do you do? Well, what is Carl Stokes' plan for places like Sandtown or any other community in Baltimore
right.
that are suffering – that are living in the same conditions as Sandhouse.
Right. So my plan is instead of taking $535 million and building a new infrastructure on the taxpayer's dime in a place like Port Covington, I think Port Covington should go forward, but I don't know that the city should pay for it. I think that the city should revitalize and create where we already have great infrastructure in places like Sandtown and Oliver, and I can find 12 or 13 more neighborhoods, including Cherry Hill and Westport. So my plan is and has been that I take whole neighborhoods and I rebuild the entire neighborhood, that I don't just take spot pieces. So we have to have a plan more than demolition. We have to have a plan of rebuilding. So if we have to knock down the houses that need emergency demolition as soon as possible. And in many cases, that should happen in deconstruction as well as just out-and-out demolition. It also could happen that we say to contractors, hey, here's 10 houses. You need the bricks, right? And so let's recycle. I think we can tell some contractors that you can take the house down and you can keep the material that you can scavenge from the house. I don't know if we thought of that, but certainly folk go out and they buy this. But we've seen anytime we knock down a house, before we come back the next day and start shoveling up and scooping up the brick and debris, there are people who pull up with a pickup truck, maybe David Warnock, but no, the people who pull up with a pickup truck start scavenging the material that's there. I'm not going to beat up on David too much. But do you know that this will be David's first municipal election that he's voted in? This is the first time he's voting. But anyway, we'll keep moving. I haven't beat up on people at all this year. And anyway,
you're going to start today?
I'm going to start today. We got 5 days. I don't want to have time to give a retort. So my plan is, and I've said it at CarlStokes2016.com, I've said that I would identify immediately six neighborhoods immediately that I call on the cusp. Well, so these are not the worst neighborhoods, but they're certainly not neighborhoods that are not in need of. But I would do a whole plan. I wouldn't do, they've got 12, 16, 100 houses that need redevelopment. I would go in and with a plan of redeveloping all of the homes that need to be, to have a plan that we would hire as many local people as we can. We would definitely hire, in many cases, minority or women-owned contractors, local contractors, who would guarantee, as a part of this, that they would hire and train guys and women who live in that community to pay them at a decent wage while they're being trained. And then as they learn the skills and are up to beyond journeyman and beyond apprentice, to pay them what they would normally be paid for the work at the skill level that they are. I would also, though, invest money into small businesses in those communities, again, as much as possible with the non-traditional, meaning women and minorities and people from that community, where I think we should be doing in Baltimore, which is unique, the country, 50-50, the number of jobs are in small businesses are 50-50 in the country. In Baltimore, 90% of jobs are in small businesses in Baltimore City. The big guys downtown are not the guys who are the major hirers of Baltimore City residents, frankly. And when they build big buildings downtown, oftentimes like 7 of the 8 subsidized buildings in the Harbor East were people who offices were across Pratt Street. They just moved across the street because they were moving to these fancy new buildings that didn't pay taxes, and so they could offer a better lease. So I would rebuild entire communities, but particularly I would have commerce in those communities also, which we don't have now.
Folks, join us, 410-319-8888. We are here with Carl Stokes, running to become the next mayor of Baltimore. 410-319-8888 is the number to call. We want to hear from you and have your conversation with Carl Stokes. Or you can tweet us, at Mark Steiner. Theodore tweeted in, at Mark Steiner, how will Carl Stokes handle the division of communities in this city? South Baltimore is now Federal Hill, example.
Right. So first of all, let's do law enforcement in all of our communities pretty much the same. We don't do that now. We don't police the communities the same, as you know. As you know, there are people in North Baltimore who have drug addictions, who have substance abuse issues, but they couldn't buy drugs in that community, at least not openly. And yet they can come into Oliver, they can come into West Baltimore, and they can, in police presence, buy drugs. They can trade drugs. It is obvious what's going on. And in those neighborhoods, folk are indiscriminately pulled aside, grabbed, thrown down on the ground still to this day, even a year later from Freddie Gray. And yet we police differently in communities of not only wealth, but upper middle and middle income communities around the city, whether it's along the harbor area or it's in communities of North Baltimore. So first of all, the divisions are there because people are aware that they are being treated differently than other citizens in the city. And they feel that they're also paying, obviously, taxes, high water bills, and that they are citizens who deserve to be treated in an equal, fair basis. And so we have to stop that, beginning with our police department, frankly. And people want good policing. So I'm not at all saying people want good policing, and they want the bad guys off the streets, and they want everyone else left alone. That's what they want.
So we're going to take a short break, Carl. We're going to come right back. We're here with Carl Stokes, who is a city councilman running to be the next mayor of Baltimore. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Clarence and Robert, you're the first two callers up. We're going to take those calls when we come back from break. On the way to break, let me remind you, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. Belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or steinershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. We'll be right back with Carl Stokes. Stay with us. Back. This is Mark Steiner. I want to remind you on our way back to our conversation with Carl Stokes to catch the Stoop Mayoral Show broadcast this Friday at 3 p.m. As the Baltimore mayoral candidates tell true personal tales about their first job. That's at 3 p.m. tomorrow on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We're here with one of those men who you'll hear tomorrow at 3 o'clock telling his story about his first job, Carl Stokes, who is represents the 12th District in Baltimore City Council and is chair of the Taxation, Finance, and Economic Development Committee. 410-319-8888 is the number. Tweet us here at Mark Steiner. And let's go to the phones, 410-319-8888. And Clarence, you're on the way, on the air.
Hey,
he's on the way, too.
Thank you, Mr. Steiner.
Thank you.
You know, Mr. Stokes, I've picked on everybody else.
Hi,
I guess I might as well pick on you, too, this
might
morning.
As well. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you. You've got construction going on the city, and dump trucks are hauling dirt all around the city, but they're just hauling it to the location, then they're putting it in the ground, covering up with asphalt or anything else. Okay, so when you've got a manufacturing operation going on, how do we know that the dirt that's being stored there and piled up in big mounds isn't toxic? I mean, an example I'm going to use here is when there was some discussion about the dirt that was down in Harbor East where Constellation Energy is built because there was some type of manufacturing that might have been toxic there. How do I know that that same dirt that came from there isn't currently being stored on Monroe and Baker less than 1,000 yards away from Carver High School? And should that type of operation be in the community at all?
Yeah, I got... I got you, Clarence. That, you know, I'm going to tell you. You know, I'm one of those guys who says that I don't know the full answer to that. If I don't know, I'm not going to give you, you know, that BS answer, politician answer, blah blah blah. I don't know the full answer to that. They should be monitoring that. In other words, the city, whenever there's such an operation going on, that there are permits that are needed, there are inspections that should be followed up in terms of that. So this is not an operation that just happens without the city inspection system looking over it. I can't tell you that that's happening at that particular location. If you can send me something off air, I will certainly look into that one. And your question about whether should it be happening at all, I don't know, again, the circumstances of this particular location.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Stokes.
You're welcome. Thank you.
On the way to Robert, our next caller up at 410-319-8888. Jacqueline Rabarge tweeted in at Mark Steiner, "I'm voting for Carl because he has the best racial justice analysis. He stood up to the thug rhetoric when no one else would."
Thank her. Thank you very much. Jacqueline?
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you.
410-319-8888. I'm going to come back to what she said and ask you a question about that. 410-319-8888. Your question is for Carl Stokes, running to be the next mayor of Baltimore. Robert in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning.
Hi, Robert.
Good morning, Robert.
Hi, Mr. Stokes. I have a riff on something you were talking about earlier.
Okay.
You were talking about the revitalization of neighborhoods, essentially block by block?
Well, no, whole neighborhood by whole neighborhood. I don't want to do it block by block. I want to have a plan for the entire neighborhood. So if I'm going into Oliver, for example, I don't want to just have a plan for the 1200 block of Caroline Street. I really would like to have an overarching, overlapping, layered plan that would
Okay. But just like, you know, an invasive plant moves, it should move just across it and everything's done behind it. I'm a carpenter, and I'm an old guy, and I'm about retired, and I know there's a lot of other old skilled guys.
Okay.
We got a lot of young guys that have no skills, right?
Yes, that's true.
And something about what you said made me think, well, maybe this guy can create a program wherein he takes, because most of this stuff is restoration. That storefront that Mark, house front that Mark was talking about is about ready to go.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Well, that can be taken, as long as the roof was good and the interior's okay.
Sure.
You know, that can be taken down and put back, and there's training and stuff to get kids doing something else. You know what I'm talking about.
Yes, sir.
But the resources are there. I don't know how you contact old, disgruntled guys that are tired of working but have their skills and don't know what to do with themselves. But there must be a way to find us, because I know Nathan's, you know, stoneworkers, roofers, guys that do custom slate, they're off the roof now, you know?
Yes, yes. I think that's an excellent idea. I think that the city, frankly, can do a better job of communication in a lot of ways. But I think in what you're just saying, you know, I show back up on Mark Steiner's show. I show up on other shows. I put a general notice out. We use social media. We find a way to find you because we make it known that we're looking for old disgruntled guys to come and help. this is his word. These are his words.
I thought you were talking
about me. I am, but... But it was starting to sound like car talk. Let's get serious. So thank you for calling. What you're suggesting is great. I think communications would help and that we get the word out strongly that we would love for you gentlemen and women who are in the business or close to retirement to be able to come back. We should turn over much of this property to you and have you work with young people who do not yet have the skill so that you can get them to a place where they can have a career. You'll teach them and put them on a job for 3 months, whatever it is, 6 months. But then they will leave you with the skills to have a career.
Thanks, Robert. That's a really interesting idea. I think we should pursue that on the air in the coming year. I think that's something that is a real missing piece in our city. 410-319-8888. Gene in Pikesville, you're on the air. Welcome.
How you guys doing this morning?
Great.
Very
hi,
well.
Gene.
Carol Payne says it always speaks highly of you, sir.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, she's a dear friend of my family, and she speaks highly of you. I have a question for you. The present controller, Miss
Pratt.
Yeah, Miss. Ms. Pratt, what are you going to do? How much is it going to cost to give her a competent staff to be able to do these audits And, right. you know, because you speak of transparency a lot.
Sure.
Can we talk about that, please?
Of course. I forget the exact number, but I think somewhere around $250,000, not an overwhelming number, that Joan Pratt, the comptroller, needs for additional staff so that she can do all of these audits that I've called for, you know, that I had to lead the charge on the legislation for, so that we can do these audits of all of our departments, our divisions. I found out, as you know, 5 years ago that we weren't doing an audit on the Department of Recreation and Parks, and then I found out not in Health Department, not in Police Department, not in schools, not our money. They do audits from the state or federal dollars, but not – anyway. So $250,000, I think, is the right number, and maybe it's twice that much, but it's not much more than $500,000 for Ms. Pratt to have enough staff so that she can do these audits on a biannual basis and in a timely fashion. And I will supply that as part of my budget.
Interesting. Thank you so much for the call, Gene. 410-319-8888. Let's go to James on the east side. You're on the air.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, James.
Good morning, Mr. Stokes.
Hi, James.
Mr. Stokes, you seem to be one of the most forthright, honest politicians in the city.
I try.
So why aren't you the front runner, and would you support the front runner if you don't win the nomination?
Right, right. Well, you know, we were all at a forum at Coppin State a few weeks ago, and we were asked one by one, could you work with everybody else on stage? There were seven of us, I think, six of us. And of course, the first five people said, of course, I can work with everybody on stage. When it came to me, I said, I can't work with everybody on stage. And truthfully, I can't, because I know, as we speak, there are a couple of people that were on that stage and in this race and top-tiered people who have already been bought and paid for. I know this. I'm close enough to understand it, to see it, and believe it. And so I will work for the citizens of the city. I will work for the city. I will go back to the schools that I'm running successfully, and I will make those schools stronger and work for greater education in the city of Baltimore. Can I work for every administration that might win this race? No, I cannot. I won't, because I will be in a place where transparency is not the order of the day, and I'm telling you right now that some things have already been bought and sold.
So I have a question about how you take money out of politics. Let me go back to the phones. A lot of people are calling in, though. 410-319-8888 is the number here. These orders that you called in. Theodore in Catonsville is on next, and then we go to Jordan in Baltimore. You're on next. Theodore, welcome.
Hello?
Hi, Theodore. You're on the air.
Hey, Theodore.
You're on the air, Theodore.
Hello, Tyrone.
Who is your name? Tyrone?
Yeah.
Okay, then, Tyrone, you're on the air. Sorry. It says Theodore on my screen. Go ahead.
Okay, I have a question. Have you ever... This program only costs $1. You ever heard of the Dollhouse program?
We're having a little trouble hearing you, Tyrone.
Okay. Have you ever heard of the Dollhouse program?
Oh, yeah, sure. William Dollar Schaefer, in my district, it actually started on Sterling Street, and Ruby Glover, my godmother, actually purchased one of those dollar homes. So, yeah, I'm familiar with them.
A lot of those houses are worth $300,000 now.
Sure.
And, what happened was the city actually lent the people with the money to restore the houses at 1% interest, and nobody fought on the loans.
Right, I got you.
It was a great success, and nobody seems to be revisiting this at all.
Oh, yeah, on my website, and some papers even mentioned that one of my strategies is the dollar homes, that I'm very much supportive of giving people who are you know, potential homeowners and also small developers who would redo these homes for home ownership, not
right.
for rental property, but giving them the houses also. I think
the thing that made this program work is the city actually lent the money to the people at 1% interest.
I got you.
And that's what made it work.
Yeah.
And if they redo this thing, they have to do it the exact same way or it won't work.
I understand.
And, nobody fought on the loans, by the way. And that would result in a $208 a month mortgage. Even Section 8 would be the government would save money in that way.
Yeah, so if it's $100,000, you'd have a $280 mortgage a month.
Yeah,
at 1% interest. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, good.
Okay, you're right online. You're right on point, I meant to say, with that. And I do support that. Thank you for bringing that back.
But what Tyrone just mentioned here before we go to Jordan, but isn't the problem there that the only reason we could do the dollar house program was because we had federal money that's no longer there to make that happen. It wasn't just city money. We had this federal HUD money that is no longer there to make that dollar house
program. What I would do, just a little differently, because of the differences in times and money, is that I would bring in a bank or two or three who would be supportive, and I would use, I'll tell you that, I would use the good faith and credit of the city to guarantee these loans.
So how do
wouldn't
you do,
be city
rehab this house?
Well,
so how do you?
That's
do
where
you
I'm going to guarantee the loan. There, for example, there often the SBA makes small businessmen's loans, and often the people who are borrowing the money from a private bank are not, quote unquote, the most creditworthy because they've never done a business of any size before. And so the SBA puts the backing of the federal government and guarantees the loan to the bank. So the bank is not going to lose any money if someone goes belly up. In the same way, I'm saying that the city would bring a consortium of banks together and ask them to buy into the city's backing that those loans, even for people whose credit might not be the best. So, and I think we can do that.
We're here with Carl Stokes. Tweet us at Mark Steiner. Write to us by email, talk@steinershow.org. Call us at 410-319-8888.
Good morning.
Good morning, Jordan.
Okay.
Good morning, Jordan.
I
said good morning. Hi, Jordan.
Yeah, I'm going to make this quick. I am a retired construction equipment mechanic. I used to have my own business. 1 year ago, over 1 year ago, I talked to a person that both of you know that at my experience, charging no one, I wanted to teach young men the trade because if you have a trade, you can always find a job. So I've tried to get in touch with Mr. Steiner there. He never returned my call. Mr. Stokes, if you become mayor, would you be interested in this program of teaching young men?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually, there were like two callers ago. There was also a gentleman who was a retired or close to retired who was a tradesman who asked almost the same question. And the answer is absolutely. I would get in touch with you and others who are at that point in your lives who are willing to now take on the responsibility of training a new crop of young people in the trades and giving them the skills so they would then have a career. Absolutely. We would do that. We would bring you on board, pay you for your value and your skills, and have you train the next group. We will give you houses and properties in the city that you can help, that you would rehabilitate for us, and work with the young group.
I apologize, Jordan, if I didn't call you back. I attempted to call everybody back.
I know it's tough.
I'm sorry. But I think that, I mean, one of the things here is we have this thing in the city, I'm coming right back to the phones here, where we tell every student that the only way out is for them to go to college.
Yeah, not a good thing.
And college is great, but
it is.
As I talked to one contractor yesterday who is also helps on the Luminous intervention, which is kind of thing they put at the Tubman House, and so he's an artist as well as a construction worker, and he's a writer as well. That you can do many things, and but if you have that skill,
sure,
of fixing HVACs, of working on elevators, of being a carpenter, being a plumber.
Absolutely.
You work.
Right.
You feed a family. You take care of.
Yes, those are new age skills, even though they're old age. In other words, you're always going to need electricians. You're always going to need carpenters and masonry people, roofers. You're going to always need that. And so those skills and that skill set guarantees you a career for life. And you're right. We should get our young people as proficient as possible. If they want to go to college, fine. But, you know, oftentimes kids who are in school leave school because they don't see where this is leading them. And they've said, you know, I'm not a college guy. I'm not going to college woman. I'm not going to go that route. But we don't have them see. Here's how I like a program over at, it's a Jesuit school. And anyway, I'll think about it. But it's an inner city school over in Canton. Crystal Ray.
Crystal Ray.
Where you work for it, you go to school 4 days and you actually work one day. It's a small $5,000 tuition, but so all of the earnings that you get goes back into your tuition to go to Crystal Ray. But here's a place, and they're not working, you know, menial jobs. They're actually working mid-skill level jobs. And so they get to see the work world. They get to begin to get that work ethic. They're beginning to understand what the work world looks like. And they're beginning to sharpen skills. And I think, and so when they are finished with Crystal Ray, many of them will move on to college. But also, they've also seen work life, and they have a reason to know which route they should go. And you're right, we should be training people. And right now, kids in Merville and Carver should be working on these construction contracts. They should be working side by side with skilled craftsmen, I would say a day a week or so, learning the skills.
410-319-8888 here with Carl Stokes, waiting to be the next mayor. And Donna, you're on the air.
And I'm ready.
You're on the air, Donna. Good morning.
Hi. Good morning, Mr. Stokes. This is Donna.
Hi, Donna.
Baltimore. And it is a pleasure to hear you on the radio. And, of course, I voted for you.
Now, thank you, Donna. That's wonderful.
Sure.
I don't know how I'm losing. It's already 2-0 here.
That's what I say, but just like you said, because if you're not the front runner, because you're independent, if they were independent, you would be the front runner.
Thank you.
Okay. And my concern is for these dollar houses and these people need a home.
Yes, ma'am.
And so we have Section 8, we have homeless, and all of these people and a lot of young people. And first and foremost, I want to bring this point up is that what about a program where you guide us or somebody A to Z in homeownership to enlighten people about the value of homeownership, what to do, credit, and guide them through, give them the workshops like they have where, you know, if you're a homeowner, this is what you need to do before you buy the house. They have that. And to follow them to the end and even have a mentor or a fellow or a program.
Great.
Because it is such a valuable asset and to pass down to our children.
It
and
is.
Ruby Glover was my teacher at Sojourner.
Oh, great.
Okay, but the point is also I want to bring up is that, you know, there's a group of people. Everybody's talking about children, the school, college-age students, you know, and the seniors. But then there's the age group between that is like, okay, well, what about us?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Right.
What about the people on disability that can't have over a certain amount of money in the bank because they will be looked at as A, B, or C, you know, stigmatized. And these things and a lot of things that I'm very, you know, wanting to know and advocate for, just like the mortgage crisis. People who lost their homes and were given $10.24.
Sure.
And that mortgage company, that loan servicing company.
You're absolutely right. You know, I tried to get financial literacy in all our schools so that they, you know, kids would be learning this. So far, legislation has failed. But I hear you. Absolutely. People do need financial literacy. We need to help them. And even as we move them toward getting themselves prepared to buy a home, we also need, as you said, to mentor them throughout another couple of years. Following that, so that we make sure that they're comfortable and they're budgeting correctly, et cetera. So I'm with you 100%. Thanks for calling in.
410-319-8888. Let us go to George. Line 3, you're on the air. Hi, George, you there? George? Okay, George, we'll try to come back to you. Hold on. 410, George, because George said he voted yesterday and he says your name wasn't on the ballot.
That weird. George, you got to call me right after this.
Are you there, George? George? All right. We'll come, see if we can come back to George. Let's go to Malik in Overly Hamilton. Malik, you there? Good morning, Malik. Good morning.
Hey, how you feeling?
Very well.
I like your show, man. You definitely keep it real. You definitely are grounded. And and not commercialized. I definitely like that. And I actually attend Memorial Baptist, and I have a lot of respect for Carl Stokes because he's not a politician. I remember he came there one day, and he said, you know, he's not campaigning. He's just here to worship. And I think that's when I had a lot of respect for him as a man.
Thank you, Malik.
No problem. Yeah, we've seen each other. My friend Barney Lane actually had the homeless cookout, and you were one of the only – you, I think, Mary Pat Clark supported that, so I definitely appreciate that.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, my concern is with the school system, and, you know, it's kind of like I like to always have a say and like to have control of some of the policies for my kids. And being an active PTA meeting member and always at my child's school, what do you think about elected school board? Because I think what that does is that gives parents such as myself
sure.
a greater voice.
Yeah.
Instead of just depending on the politician to speak for us, I want to speak for myself.
Yeah, I got you. Well, you know, the state legislature actually this year passed a bill which allows for two elected school board members. The actual school board is going to go go from 9 to 11 members, and the two new members will be elected. I don't know what year that takes effect. I think next year, not this coming 2016-2017 year, but the 2017-2018 year. But so now you will have that chance. There will be two members elected to the school board.
You sure you think it should be mixed? But you've also said that the problem with the school board is that most of the school system are black children and working class black children, and that face is not represented on the school
board. Right, there's no representation of that of that constituency on the school board. Yeah, 85% of the kids are poor black on subsistence, and there is no representation at all on the school board. Now, there are good people on the school board, obviously, and they are somewhat varied, but obviously they're not varied enough if they have anyone who represents the actual constituency of the school system.
Let's try to get a quick call in here for George. He's called back about the voting issue. George, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning, Mr. Stokes.
Hi, George. How are you?
All right, and good morning, Mr. Steiner.
Good morning.
Yesterday, I voted over on Baltimore and Pauperton.
Yes.
In the early voting.
Yeah, University of Maryland. Okay.
Yeah, and your name was on there for head of the city council, but it wasn't on there for mayor.
You sure?
I'm pretty sure.
Okay, we're going over there today. We're going over there with our challenger sheets, and we're going to go right into the elections and ask the judges to look at a ballot. By the way, you can call us at 443-554-3620, 443-554-3620. That's our headquarters. But please follow up with us and give us more information, would you please?
Sure. Let me write this down real quick.
Okay. You ready? 443
554-3620. Okay, I have it.
Call us in the next 10 minutes, please. Right. Thank you, sir.
Thanks for the call, George. Glad we got back to you. 410-319-8888. Let's go to Brittany in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you guys?
Good morning, Brittany. Well.
Hi, Brittany.
Hi. I just wanted to actually address the city lighting in Baltimore. Lately, I've been noticing that we have the LED lights.
Yes.
In the poorest of neighborhoods, to be quite honest. And they say, oh, it saves money. Yet, I see the old school yellow lighting in Canton and South Point, down the Inner Harbor, and on the main streets that are gateways to the city and outside, to get in and out of the city. If you take the ride, let's say Linwood Avenue, from Canton to, let's say, all the way up to Bocek.
Okay.
Because that's where it stretches, right?
Right.
That as soon as you get to Hollandtown, those yellow lights stop and they become white, and you can't see anyone walking towards you. I can't even see anybody in my neighborhood.
Right.
And it creates low visibility. So I want to know, if it saves so much money, why not put the white lights in every neighborhood? It kind of seems to me it's like racial profiling to me.
Right.
I have a petition online to actually just change these lights back, and if I can share them.
Okay.
Get some signatures so we can.
Well, we're out of time.
So send them over to me, CarlStokes2016.com. Is that okay?
Yeah. So, well, what is your web? Where can people go, Brittany, very quickly?
It's change.org, and it says Baltimore City Lights, change them back.
Got it. I'll check that out myself.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for calling.
That's an important question.
Yeah, it is. you got to work on that neighborhood by neighborhood, because honestly, the gateway streets are meant to be brighter, and in some neighborhoods they don't want the bright lights coming into their bedrooms, coming, you know. So, and I'm not saying, but anyway, you got to work it out neighborhood by neighborhood, because there are some neighborhoods who don't want bright lights.
410-319-8888. Patrick, you're on the air in Hamilton.
Hi, how are you both?
Hey, Patrick.
It's an honor to talk to you both.
Thank you.
I was a graduate from Mergenthaler, and I know the importance to have a trade. I've been in my cabinet making trade for 26 years now.
Okay.
The dollar houses that you talked about,
mm-hmm.
why couldn't, if you become mayor, and I hope you do,
thank you,
we give a house to a school like Mergenthaler, have those students go in there, build that.
Great idea.
Sell that house and take that money and turn it over into the next house, into the next house,
wow.
into the next house.
It's fantastic.
And also almost make it a competition between trade schools to who can do a better or turn a bigger profit, and keep rolling that profit. Start on a corner of an empty block and work that whole block all the way down.
Yeah, that's even better. And to put that profit incentive in there is the greatest thing, because we work hard in America if there's a profit. And, you know, I want to open these night schools at Carver and Mervo and Emerson Westside Skills Center, because it's not just for the folk who are there in the day, which it should be, but so many kids have dropped out of school. So many folk are now out on the street, underemployed, even unemployed. And so if we could, so those who are underemployed, if we could help them move back into their skills by having night schools open at our trade schools. And I love the idea of what he just said, though, of making it a competitive situation to take houses and keep building them and plow that money back into the program and to the kids who are working. So in other words, they would get a pay while they're in school. This wouldn't just be it would be a school project, but they would also be compensated.
So very quickly, I mean, before we run out of time, I said to the chief of the commissioner on Monday, if 90% of the crimes in Baltimore are nonviolent misdemeanors and most of them don't go to trial.
Right.
7% do.
Yes.
Shouldn't we take some money and turn over the safety of our streets to things like Safe Streets and the Nation of Islam and other places that can actually patrol the streets and do a good job and help people ameliorate issues without
resorting
to police?
Absolutely. And we've got to get past the quote-unquote, well, not quote-unquote, but perception that the Nation of Islam or that Safe Streets, who are former offenders, should not be allowed, or they have this... I think absolutely. You know, when we had the Nation of Islam patrolling, for example, public housing projects in West Baltimore,
yes.
they were doing great. But then people said, you know who they are? They're Farrakhan. They don't like us, or they don't like you, or they don't it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense, right? Because we do have folk who are from different ethnicities patrolling different communities. Let them do it.
One quick final call, line one, Chief Falconhawk.
Chief,
you there?
Yeah, Chief Falconhawk.
Hey,
okay,
Chief.
How you gentlemen doing?
Well, we only got a minute, so jump into it.
Okay, right. I'm going to play the devil advocate.
Uh-oh.
Yes. I just want to know, this is to Carl Stokes and all the other politicians in Baltimore, where have y'all been for the last 50 years? That's all I want to say. Thank you.
And I said, you got to be kidding me. Really? Really? I've been in the community for the last 40 years at least. Are you kidding me? Right. I'm the guy been standing in the gap and say, don't give all this money away without taking care of the people in the community. I'm the guy who says, let's fix our schools. I'm the guy who says, drive these water bills down. Really? Seriously? I feel like the guy in a car commercial. Where have I been? Holy moly. Thank you, sir.
So how do folks get in touch with your campaign? Today's
last day of early voting. CarlStokes2016.com. CarlStokes2016.com. Everything is on that page. You can go to our Twitter account, Instagram account, Facebook account, and you can also do anything else you might want to do, like volunteer.
And the number you gave out earlier, 443-554-3620 is
that's right. That's campaign. The campaign office. Thank you.
Crossroads, good to have you here. Good luck down the campaign trail.
Thank you, Mark. I'm glad to be here. Glad to be with you. Looking forward to leading this city in a very strong way.
We'll take a short break. A news break coming back. It's time for Soundbite. It is Thursday. We're going to do a wrap-up of what's happening in the legislative session there, talk about neonicotinoids, learn about what's happening in our communities like Oliver, and hear a little recipe. Stay with us. We'll be right back.